I'd like to talk about gaining freedom through the precepts, which are guidelines for conduct. There are five basic precepts that are for lay people in everyday life. There are three more that get added for special occasions. And then if you take monastic vows, it can go up to 300 or more. So I used to apologize for talking about the precepts because it sounds at first like thou shalt and thou shalt not. And it isn't really. It's not grit your teeth and do it right. It's like a road map or the lines on the street that keep you from crashing into other cars. They're very handy that way. So they're there to help us. And if we work with them in an open-hearted way, they can lead to freedom. So it's not about whether you're good or you're bad or you're going to get punished. That's really not what the precepts are about. They're about suggestions for living with ease and happiness in a way that will benefit all beings. It's about living in harmony. So they offer us guidance. How to do what we need to do in this life to stay within those lines. And they allow us to operate with less insecurity about how we should act, because we've kind of mapped that out in advance. Back before you could put maps in your pocket and have them talk to you. When I was going to go get in the car, I always check the map. How am I going to get there? Well, that's what the precepts do for us. And I'll just list them, and in doing so, I'm going to have to talk about them. Let me make a few overview kind of comments. Everybody has their own way of talking about the precepts. And if you go back through all of the literature, you'll see a lot of different attitudes. And some of the traditional approaches will break the precepts down into elements that remind me a lot of American law. There are elements like intent and an action that does harm. I mean, sometimes they even get into whether or not the harm was foreseeable. And all of this is to determine whether or not there is a transgression. And along with that idea of transgression, there's this implication of blame. So I would like to present an analysis that leans away from that. So the first precept, it's very, very common. It's kind of a cultural universal. Don't kill. The question, though, although it sounds extremely straightforward, there is a lot of benefit that can be had from complicating that. Don't kill what? And under what circumstances? Life, anything that's alive, can be killed. Life comes in two major flavors. One is animal, and the other is plant. Clearly, we have to kill something in order to survive. Except, and I've recently learned to stop being so enthralled with this idea because my friends were starting to think I was insane. But there is a way around killing anything. I don't know if you remember the invasion of the body snatchers. Soylent Green. Okay, well, this is neither plant, animal, nor people. Nor is it soy or lint or green. But the name of it is Soylent. And it's out there. It's being marketed. Unknown thousands of people are eating this regularly. It totally bypasses the whole biology of food, which is, you know, the plants take the minerals out of the soil. The animals eat the plants. Other animals eat them. Homo sapiens eats those animals. And we walk off into the sunset. But this idea of Soylent is to go right to the minerals and the vitamins as chemicals, as part of the makeup of the planet. All right, so I took a very, very broad view there of, you know, this question of killing for food. And then if you are only going to eat the vegetables, the plants, then what have the people who raised the plants done that might have killed animals? I used to be an avid gardener, and I discovered that it was very, very difficult to garden without killing any animals at all. And then there's, you know, the mountain lion that jumps on you when you're out hiking. You know, or the other human being who attacks you. Do you kill for survival? And if so, if there is any point at which the lines hold killing a sentient being, what are the circumstances? And how does that feel to you? The point is that we all ultimately draw our own lines. And then there's the winter when the ants get tired of being out in the cold and the rain, and they bring all their eggs with them. How many ants can you kill to convince them that they need to stay outdoors nonetheless? The last thing on earth I want to do is offer anybody answers to these questions. But to just demonstrate that these five precepts raise a lot of wonderful questions that have to do with our place on this planet, among other human beings, among other species, among the forces that are ruling the future of this planet as a rock in space. What farming techniques are adding to global warming? And how can we, as consumers, affect that? Where are your lines drawn on each of these questions? People will probably go to war over where the lines are drawn, which is kind of ironic when the precept is don't kill. But the important thing is for each of us to know where our lines are and to learn to live within them. And I'll get back to that, the technique for doing that. Now, all of the precepts, kind of the intro to them is, for purposes of training the mind, I intend to abstain from. So it's killing, lying, stealing, abusing sexuality, and abusing intoxicants. And with lying, sort of a standardized, you know, you put them all together, 2,500 years of people talking about this, and come out to sort of a common denominator. It's deceiving others for our own benefit. And sometimes we lie just because we don't want to stand around when they're mad. Or whatever our game plan is, that we're willing to bend the way we express reality or depart from it altogether. Now, lying or telling the truth is a function of speech. And so much of what we do as human beings has to do with speech that it comes up not just in the precepts, but in the Eightfold Path itself. It's number three of the eight folds. And we have extra guidance from the wise speech teachings. And that is, we have four guidelines for wise speech. That it be true, kind, helpful, and appropriate. So with kind, we get back to this idea of intention. And with kind, what effect does it have on the listener? And then appropriate, is the audience capable of getting the benefit of what we're saying? So if it's the town folk with the pitchforks and the torches on their way to the castle, they're probably not going to listen to a reasoned explanation. So to be appropriate, you need to find the speech that's going to get through to them. With stealing, depriving another to satisfy one's greed, you're taking something that belongs to somebody else. You're taking it away from them. Another way of expressing this is taking what is not freely given. So if I go to a retreat at IRC, Redwood City Retreat Center, and I've totally forgotten my shampoo, and I go to take a shower, and there's shampoo on the shelf, and the retreat center knows that we're not going to use it unless they tell us, you're free to use this. So there are cute little signs up there telling me that. But, you know, I go for a walk around my neighborhood every day, almost every day. And just down the street from me, one of my neighbors has an orange tree. And they don't pay much attention to it. And those oranges are, they're ripe, they're about to fall off. Or they've actually fallen off. And so those oranges are sitting there, they're on their property. Just right there within reach. And, you know, where I draw the line is, it's not freely offered. There's no sign saying, Rebecca, help yourself. You know, and the thing is, every now and then, one of those oranges falls down and runs along the sidewalk, and it's not on their property anymore. They're so good. Yeah. They are really, really sweet. But I know where my line is, and that's very helpful. With abusing sexuality, what does it say in the commandments? Thou shalt not commit adultery. Adultery was defined for many, many years as another man's wife. We've broadened that a little bit now, and it's, you know, another person's spouse or girlfriend. Or the person they met in the bar last night. Or somebody they've got a crush on. But then it depends on what your relationship to them is. And there are many other aspects of it. You know, you're abusing sexual energy if the other person is too young. Or impaired in some way. Not able to really give full consent. Even though they appear willing, you know, or using the sexual energy of yours or someone else's in order to manipulate them or to manipulate the situation. And, you know, that's possible to do in, even in a very long-term relationship. So, again, a lot to think about, a lot to explore. And I'm only touching on the high points here. So, the fifth one is abusing intoxicants. Willingly clouding the mind. Well, the traditional rule is don't touch it at all, period. No alcohol, no marijuana, no peyote, no whatever it is you've concocted in the lab. But it's clear from the teachings that Buddha is talking about the clouding the mind. And again, I have no interest in telling you where to draw your lines. And it may not only be intoxicating substances, it could be intoxicating activities or just activities that cloud the mind, like compulsive reading, as wonderfully literary as it might be. I've had a good friend who would sort of disappear into books for long periods of time when there was something that she didn't want to face. Just wasn't willing yet to acknowledge what was going on. And sometimes this can be just as serious as addiction or alcoholism. You know, gambling very often serves this function. Television, lots of things. For some people, sports. And this really is an area where we can do a lot of reflection about, are we really feeding the soul? Are we giving our mind something nourishing with this activity? Or are we clouding it? The way that I worked with the precepts initially, fairly early in my practice, was to take a 5-month course with them. It wasn't intensive homework, but every month we had, as a group, we had a precept to work with and really concentrated. And sure enough, the first month was April, a lot of time in the garden. So a lot of minute decisions were made over and over. And the approach that I'm going to suggest to you is to think about the precept in, you know, the really broad terms and see where it resonates for you and where it's uncomfortable. And explore that. Why? Why are you drawn to doing it one way or another? And I'm saying there are no bad reasons. It's just a matter of exploring it and seeing how it makes you feel about the conduct in question. So, you know, learn the precept. Seriously ponder it. Explore the way you feel about it. And then practice it. Try to act according to your understanding of the precept, where you've drawn those lines. Try to stay in them. Compare your acts. Did I follow my own guidelines? And when you don't, you know, when you hold up the map to where you've been and you didn't go there, it's not about feeling bad. That's not the goal. It's about, again, going back to questions. Why did I do that? Having thought about it, I made this, you know, vow. I set this intention of how I was going to act. I had a lapse. What thoughts preceded my acting the way I did? And what clinging motivated it? And I think this is why I always stress so much the idea of feeling things, getting in touch with the way the body actually experiences our emotions. Because, you know, the body really doesn't lie about how we feel about things. How we feel about things is the way we feel. And there's a feeling to clinging. So if we get familiar with this, then we will have this door open into the way we cling, or window open into it. So we get to see the mechanism of clinging. You know, my dentist has great pens, and they're in a cup, you know, and they write so smoothly, and they're ballpoints, and that's unusual. Every time I use them, they write smoothly. I don't need to take one every time I go to the dentist. I know they're offered freely, but, you know, I think my dentist really wants me to pass them to my friends or let other people see that I'm using them. That's the purpose there. So, you know, that's where my guideline is. And I'll see my hand reaching over there. Nice pens. Want one. And I'm feeling greed. I can feel that. That's my clinging. Take the hand back. So this looking inward to see how we feel about what we've done, again, isn't to punish the self, but just to explore with interest and compassion. I'm not a bad person because I took the pen this time. I want to look at it to understand, did I draw the line in the right place? Is it really okay for me to take that pen? So this twinge, this discomfort around it, to explore it, get to know it, it becomes a warning sign, a flashing yellow light for the next time. You know, so instead of when I'm walking out with the pen in my purse or the orange in my hand, it's when I reach for it that I get that twinge next time. And I'm able then to bring more wisdom to my conduct. And it kind of feeds itself so that also next time I'm just going to be more mindful. So when we're tempted to say something that comes from a heated place or a place of fear or greed, you know, we want to manipulate the person into something. If we feel that twinge, then we have this freedom in the precepts because we know that there is this second precept against lying and against speech that isn't kind. And let that be a guide. Mindful speech is really, really tough. We can go over this again and again and again, and there's always something to discover. I know that I have slippery places with speech, and they are parties and committee meetings. So before I go into them, I like to review the precepts, particularly the ones around speech, wise speech and the precept against lying. And I just set this resolve. that I really want to use wise speech. And I want to avoid harming through speech. And with all of the precepts, there's the, you know, the twinge, the recognition that this is a difficult situation, something that brings us back to mindfulness of the precepts. And then there's this wonderful capacity we can develop called restraint. Restraint. Sometimes it's phrased as counting to 10. I find that counting to three can be a real lifesaver. Whatever, just pausing before doing it. So for me, the way that works is I will resolve to let pass openings for making jokes, because this is where I get into trouble. I grew up in a family of wisecrackers. The dinner table was a competition for who could get the most laughs. This is my resolution at parties. Just sacrifice the joke. Make sure it's wise speech first. And then if there's still an opportunity to make it, fine. And in committees, it's listen well before I speak my piece. And boy, that can be a challenge. So this way of practicing that I'm talking about leads to freedom, because we get essentially to be blameless eventually if we stay within those lines. It may look like I'm leaving the window wide open for drawing the lines as wide as possible. But really, if we take a heartfelt exploration of how we want to conduct ourselves and we make these decisions, it's really, we're not going to do that. And if we do stay within the lines, it feels so good. There is a sense of lightness, of spontaneity, and friendliness, because we're no longer on guard. Oh, can I say this now? If I do that? You know, these decisions have been made in advance. And so the spontaneity and the friendliness can flourish. And it gives us a sense of contentment with what's behind us, what's in the past, what we've done, and confidence in the future. I know how I want to do things. And we're free from self-recrimination. So eventually, people are going to catch on that they're safe around us. And we have greater freedom to be in relationship with other people. And the greatest happiness is freedom from the three poisons, greed, hatred, and delusion. So as we practice with the precepts, what we're doing is we're interrupting the impulses to act on greed, hatred, and delusion, and eventually weakening them, so that we don't feel the greed that makes us want to steal, or the hatred that makes us want to hurt someone. And sticking with the truth dispels delusion. And so does all of this practice that I've been talking about, this exploration and analysis, where we begin to see the causal connection between thought, emotion, and conduct. And it's liberating, because we learn to avoid the pitfalls and life just gets easier and deeper and more loving, because we know that we're acting in a way that reduces the harm to all beings. That's the basic principle behind all of the precepts. And that is a very joyful way to live. Thank you.